add 15 village public safety officers into those communities that have no law enforcement whatsoever right now.
Governor Parnell releases his budget plan. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 14th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a housing summit looks at the needs for seniors.
We need to figure out a way to provide the services that we provide at a lower cost. Yet, our senior population is growing at 5 times what it is in the lower 48.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
Anchorage leaders held a press conference at City Hall today to discuss school safety after news of the school shooting in Connecticut. Anchorage School District Superintendent Jim Browder says he's had a lot of inquiries from parents about school safety since this morning's tragedy, and he says he wants people to know that every school in the district has an emergency plan and they practice them regularly.
One of the things that our principals do is on a regular basis, they practice lockdown drills and other type of drills to make sure that everybody in their individual schools practices emergency situations.
A statement from Browder appears on the ASD website. In the letter, he says the district places student and staff safety as a top priority. He also notes that the district partners with the Anchorage Police Department to have school resource officers in the schools. There are 16 school resource officers stationed at Anchorage high schools, plus 2 supervisors not stationed at schools. Anchorage Police Chief Mark Mew says his department works closely with the district.
Those plans cover 18 to 20 different scenarios, including the kind of thing you saw today. The schools have school resource officers, and we work diligently to keep ahead of indications of trouble in advance so that we can forestall tragedies when we can, and to train and plan for responses.
Chief Mew addressed why the Anchorage School District does not have metal detectors or other screening systems at front doors of schools.
In order to make that work, you have to basically redesign the entire building. Because these schools were built before these considerations were important to folks. And I don't know how many back doors they have, but a high school might have 60 or 80 back doors. So it doesn't do any good at all to have a very complex, slow, methodical screening process at the front door.
Mew worked as the district's director of security and emergency preparedness from 2003 to 2009, writing the emergency plans and developing the school resource officer program. An automated phone message reassuring parents about school safety is going out to households with children in the Anchorage School District tonight. Today, Governor Sean Parnell announced a $12.8 billion budget for 2014, saying it's more than $1 billion leaner than this year's budget and leaves a $500 million surplus. But he's willing to negotiate with lawmakers on increasing it if they will agree to a spending limit.
When I met with legislators, I told them, I'd like to set a spending limit together with you. You have community priorities that you want to include in the budget. I have not spent all of the revenue that we project is coming in under this plan. If you would like to set a spending limit with me, we have some room to do that if you want to go up, and certainly I'll work with you if you want to go down and simply put more in savings than the $508 million that is currently calculated.
The governor's capital budget, including federal funds, is $1.8 billion. It includes money for the Susitna Dam and Kinnick Arm Bridge projects and new schools in Nightmute and Quinnahock. Parnell says some progress has been made in addressing domestic violence and sexual assault, and he wants to double down on that with more law enforcement, caseworkers, shelters, and centers.
Our Choose Respect initiative will be reinforced in this budget with about $15 million, including $3 million for domestic violence and sexual assault prevention efforts, and over $500,000 for shelters and services, nearly $2 million for child abuse prevention and treatment and child advocacy centers. We'll continue providing law enforcement to communities that have none. So just like in the prior years, we'll add 15 village public safety officers into those communities that have no law enforcement whatsoever right now.
The budget adds 18 new state troopers, most of them in areas of the rail belt where the population is growing. For education, the governor budgeted $8 million for his scholarship program and $1.25 billion for kindergarten through 12th grade school funding. And he wants to use the state's increased broadband internet capabilities for a digital learning thrust.
The Association of Alaska School Boards is working with districts on digital learning in several locations with compelling results. And we're going to partner with the association in a four-year digital learning initiative to build on that good work. The budget funds almost $6 million for the statewide digital learning initiative.
But as in past years, Parnell is not ready to okay a permanent increase in education funding, instead choosing to give the schools a one-time infusion of funding to meet the increased cost of energy.
Frankly, my design was to put money in that addressed something that we could say, this is what the money's for, and it's for rising energy costs. Okay, I can support moving $25 million for rising energy costs. That's a recognized cost. Let's do it.
The Parnell budget puts $10 million into a five-year Chinook salmon research project and $10 million into mapping and digging up other information for the mining industry. He wants to build a facility for giving the industry access to mineral cores that the state has drilled through the years and stored in cargo containers. Responding to questions after his speech, the governor said he's not budging on one of two federal health care reform requirements he's facing, to either set up a health insurance exchange or have the federal government do it. He says a number of other states are also balking on that one. But on a second Affordable Care Act requirement to expand Medicaid eligibility, while he remains skeptical about federal promises of money, at the same time, he has entered into negotiations on Medicaid with the state's health care providers. A legislative aide resigned today because of ethics violations involving an anti-Islam organization. The Legislative Ethics Committee ruled that Karen Sawyer, an aide to Representative Shelley Hughes of Palmer, had failed to disclose that she was a board member of the organization Stop Islamization of America, and that she allowed the director of that organization to use state facilities while she was a staffer for the late Carl Gatto, who died while in office and was replaced by Hughes. The committee recommended that Sawyer not be employed by the legislature in the future. Representative Hughes had a talk with Sawyer this morning, at which she accepted her recommendation. In a press release, Hughes called the violations a lapse in judgment. Gatto introduced House Bill 88, which, had it passed, would have banned Islamic Sharia law in Alaska. The Alaska Commission on Aging, along with several state agencies, held a summit on senior housing Wednesday in Anchorage. Seniors from around the state and those who work with them came together to look for solutions to Alaska's looming senior housing crisis. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reports.
There are no magic bullets. It takes all of us working together and finding the best way to provide services in the most efficient manner that we can.
That's Bill Strewer, the commissioner for the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, addressing a room full of seniors and advocates at the Wilda Marsden Theater in the Lusac Library. They all came to the summit in Anchorage because they're concerned about one thing, senior housing. Strewer says several factors motivated the state to help coordinate the housing summit, and they all have to do with money.
I think we're at a perfect storm for the need for this summit. We need to figure out a way to provide the services that we provide at a lower cost. Yet, our senior population is growing at five times what it is in the lower 48.
Sturr says housing tops the list of concerns the state has in planning for its growing aging population. Recently, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation announced $35 million in federal and state grants, the majority of which will provide housing for seniors. Of the 199 units being provided by the grants, 94 are newly constructed senior housing, and 55 are acquisition and rehab of existing senior units. But Mark Romick, the Director of Planning and Program Development for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, says that's really just a drop in the bucket.
It's a step in the right direction. The overall need is in the several thousands of units, and we're talking about 149 this year.
And the demand for affordable senior housing is sure to grow. There are over 90,000 seniors statewide now, with the majority in Anchorage and South Central Alaska. Officials say Alaska's senior population is projected to increase by about 6% each year for the next 20 years, as the bulk of the baby boomers hit retirement. The population over 85, those with special housing needs, is also growing very fast. Colleen Bickford is the HUD director for the Alaska Field Office in Anchorage. It used to be that you could get a single source of funding to build, operate, and provide rental assistance for senior housing through HUD. But with dwindling federal dollars, she says it's more complicated.
The reality is that with the cost of land, the cost of energy, it takes other sources of money that have to be leveraged into the project. And it takes quite a bit of expertise to figure out how to best organize those funding sources so that they don't conflict with one another and so forth.
Bickford says Alaskans have to let go of their grant mentality and look to other sources of funding for senior housing, like low-interest loans. Stephen Rouse develops senior housing in Alaska. He's the president and CEO of Rouse & Associates, based in Homer and Kenai. He's also the executive director of the Kenai Housing Initiative and has developed projects throughout the state, including in remote Alaska. He says as the funding sources shift and the pressure for senior housing increases, the development of senior housing in Alaska will rest on the state's shoulders.
All projects, regardless of where they are usually not going to be able to be driven solely by market, in that rents will not cover the cost of the money you need to borrow to build it. So there has to be some kind of subsidy funding. And in rural Alaska, it even costs more. So if it is a policy decision in Alaska to build rural senior housing, the state needs to pony up.
Mary Ann Borchert is with the Retirement Community of Fairbanks, a nonprofit that's developing a market-rate senior housing community in Fairbanks. She says she came all the way to Anchorage for the Senior Summit because she's looking for ways to let state leaders know the importance of keeping seniors in Alaska.
It's very important to think about the seniors in the state, because there are so many of us. The seniors are staying in the state and contribute a lot in terms of volunteering, in terms of retirement income coming in that is spent in the community. So these seniors are very important people to keep around.
Something she hopes state lawmakers will keep in mind as they return to Juneau and consider how to address the lack of affordable housing available for Alaska's growing senior population. Organizers of the Alaska Senior Housing Summit say they'd like to have additional summits on other senior issues in the coming year. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, state managers prepare for another bad king salmon season.
Escapements we saw in 2012 were as bad as we've seen them since the mid-1970s. So we are definitely in a period of poor production.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by The Quality Inn and Suites on Spinard, providing lodging for Medicare patients in Anchorage with a 24-hour airport shuttle and a hot continental breakfast. Reservations at 800-221-7550.
Anchorage's Keegan Randall finished sixth in a 10-kilometer
World Cup ski race in Canmore, Alberta yesterday. It was her career best World Cup finish in a classic distance race. The reigning World Cup sprint champion was 30 seconds back of winner Justyna Kowalczyk of Poland, one of the top skiers on the tour. Just 3.6 seconds separated third from seventh place on a hilly Canmore course. Randall told Fairbanks Nordic Ski Club competition director John Estol she's pretty happy with her race.
Felt pretty good coming off the downhills, tried to make a little bit of move, but hit the wall at the top of that hill, and then just didn't play my cards right coming into the finish, but happy to have been in the fight.
Randall's Alaska Pacific University teammate Sadie Bjornsson was 25th. Another APU skier, U.S. ski team veteran Holly Brooks, had a little tougher time finishing 30th. She says the toll of recent heavy travel and racing coupled with the high altitude at Canmore piled up on her.
You know, it's respectable, but I know I can ski a lot faster than that.
Several other Alaska-based skiers competed in yesterday's races at Canmore. Today is rest day. Racing resumes tomorrow with a skate technique sprint. Things wrap up Sunday with skiathons, in which competitors ski the first half in classic technique and skate ski the second portion. A troller with two people on board almost sank about 30 miles west of Wrangell on Wednesday evening. Coast Guard spokesman David Mosley says the Carrie Arlene's crew donned survival suits after rough weather threatened the 36-foot troller. He says they expected they might have to abandon ship.
There were 3 to 4 foot waves. They were crashing into the boat and over the boat and causing it to take water that way. There wasn't any report of damage to the hull itself, but it was just more of the elements coming against the vessel there and causing it to start sinking.
They put out a distress call via VHF radio, and the Coast Guard responded with an urgent call for assistance. A nearby ship, the 65-foot Eric, responded and towed the troller to a protected cove. Its one-man crew helped restart the Carrie Arlene's engine and electronics so the water could be pumped out. Mosley did not have the names of the crew on either ship. State fisheries managers are preparing for another year of bad king salmon returns. There will be no commercial fishery for Chinook bound for the two southeast rivers that flow out of Canada, the Stikeen and the Taku. Fish and Game Southeast Chinook and Coho Project Director Ed Jones says the Stikeen forecast has been dropped to 22,500 fish and the Taku forecast is 26,000.
They're about as bad as we've seen, and across the board, in southeast Alaska, the escapements we saw in 2012 were as bad as we've seen them since the mid-1970s. So we are definitely in a period of poor production.
Jones says something is happening at sea that is resulting in fewer Chinooks coming back. It's beyond any possible pattern of past fishing on the rivers.
The problem has been Mother Nature. The production is taking a downward turn, and you know you can't blame the directed fisheries in the Taku for the reason why fish aren't returning to the Chilkat or to the Nass River in British Columbia. You know, this is a coastwide event right now.
He said Fish and Game's preseason Chinook forecasts have been higher than what actually happened for the past 6 years.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmiut,
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Tony Gorman. This week on AK, necropsy. When dead marine mammals wash up in Unalaska, a team of local scientists springs into action to reconstruct what went wrong. These forensic investigators come from the Fish and Wildlife Office, from a university program, and as was the case this month, Unalaska's high school. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal braved morbid humor and gore to bring back this report from a sea lion necropsy.
The stellar sea lion that washed up on the beach is about 7 feet long, barely an adult female. There are no obvious injuries or trauma, no bullet holes, no scars. It's impossible to say why she died by looking at her. Reed Brewer is sharpening knives and getting ready to necropsy the sea lion. The professor for the Alaska Sea Grant Program is decked out in a high-tech wetsuit.
So we'll do samples of all the organs, skin, muscle, blubber, and we'll do them in duplicate.
Brewer asked a fish and game biologist and a local volunteer to help him out. They're all experienced with necropsies, so they quickly burn through some of the easier tasks on their list. They start by taking skin and blubber samples. To get to the internal organs, they slice through the sea lion's ribs.
That's the actual bone.
The procedure buzzes right along, but the high school helpers that Brewer's enlisted are running late. By the time they finally make it down to the beach, the sea lion is already headless. But there's still plenty of work for Kevin, Jasmine, Andy, and brother and sister duo Liam and Jess to do.
This is the Tsunami Bowl team.
Tsunami.
Yeah.
It's a Tsunami Club.
No, we're just random kids. We don't even want to be here. We're going to show up.
They are a team. Team Real Krusty Krab. They participate in the Alaska Tsunami Ocean Sciences Bowl, a quiz and research competition. The team studies together for 6 hours a week after school with their coaches, Brewer, and their science teacher David Gibson, who's brought them down to the beach. The kids just finished their big project for the year, a paper on subsistence crabbing in Captain's Bay. Now that that's out of the way, the coaches want these teenagers to see that marine biology isn't all lectures and research papers.
I believe somebody calls this work.
I call it fun.
I think that's as close as Jasmine's getting.
She's kind of perched on this little rock with her sandals on.
My little rock right here.
Even though Jasmine won't get near the sea lion, the team is pretty unfazed by the gore. They all help out, taking pictures, wrapping tissue samples in foil, and labeling them for the lab. The closest anyone comes to complaining is when Brewer starts picking apart the sea lion's liver. To get to it, he has to shove aside the overfilled stomach, freeing a thick odor.
Huh? Smell?
It smells like...
It smells like the ocean.
Beef.
It smells like beef.
Smells like chicken.
Jess, who thought the sea lion smelled like beef, seems the most interested in the necropsy. And when Brewer finds something strange in the abdominal cavity, Jess is at his side.
That's just disturbing.
It's like an alien when you think of that.
Reed, do you know what it is and you're just not telling us?
I have a bunch of them. See the little hand? Little flipper?
It had a fetus.
Oh, cool. Oh, whoa! Wow! Can I keep it? Cool.
Yeah, it is really cool, but it's sad.
Brewer says it's not uncommon to find a fetus during a necropsy. While he says it's sad for him, too, there's nothing they can do. The kids quiet down a little, until Brewer starts taking stool samples. Then the mood lightens considerably. It's around that time that Team Joker Liam decides he wants to name the sea lion.
Yeah, his name is Francois. Her name is Francesca, then.
Brewer starts cleaning his tools while the kids say their goodbyes and make plans to meet back in the classroom later for practice. Nothing that Brewer saw inside the sea lion this afternoon jumped out at him as a possible cause of death. The team will send their samples to an animal vet in Anchorage, and it'll be up to her to help solve the mystery. The results might not come back until February. By then, the tides and the eagle that's been swooping overhead for the past hour will have taken care of what's left of Francesca. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to Manly Hot Springs, a small community of about 80 people in the interior west of Fairbanks.
This is Chuck Parker, resident of Manly Hot Springs. I've been out here since 1988. I'm still a Chichaco, I guess. We're at the end of the Elliott Highway, We're right on the banks of the Tanana River, 70 miles from where the Tanana empties into the Yukon. There are hot springs here. They're privately owned by the Dart family. I believe they came out here in the 50s and bought the property that they own now, and the hot springs were on them. The locals use the bathhouse for weekly bathing. They're inside a greenhouse, soaking tubs. You rent the facility for an hour. It is yours to do with for that hour. You can go in and soak. The greenhouse, they have grapes and flowers and whatnot inside in the summer. This time of year, it's kind of stark, but I'd say it's around 50 degrees in there at 50 below outside. There is a town center, the trading post office, gas station, kind of in the middle of town. Also, there's a roadhouse that was built back in 1903. Oh, what do you do for fun in Alaska? I see snow machining, dog sledding, skiing, ski joring, hiking, snowshoeing. It's beautiful country. It's peaceful. I felt comfortable here and I've just stayed.
That was Chuck Parker, a resident of Manly Hot Springs. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Lauren Rosenthal, Dave Waldron, and Annie Fite. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Tony Gorman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg. Tony Gorman was our AK guest host this week. APRN Steve Heimel reported from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.